Right.
Makes me want to tap into the rage tree. Rolling!
This has got to be on heavy rotation on Wolf's favorite playlist, doesn't it?
I would think so.
And it's also the secondary theme song of our next guest from ArizonaSports.com, the one and only.
Look at you, Nolan Olson. Look at you hit that pose there. You did that like a pro, Casey Kasem.
What do you mean like a pro?
That was. Man, that was good.
I am a pro.
Man, that was good.
Kellen Olson joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line. Hi, Kellen.
It's brought the energy. I'm happy to be here. Hello.
You feeling pumped?
Yeah.
Just let out a primal scream. Do it, Kellen.
No, thank you.
All right, speaking of aggressiveness and energy, primal screams, all of it, man, what a difference a couple weeks makes for DeAndre Ayton, huh?
Right. I think that fans can look at the three games prior to Saturday and see a change in him, and I totally agree. But what we even saw on Saturday, I highlighted two of his turnovers, which were traveling calls because he was so antsy off the dribble and really just showed no hesitation at all in attacking Nikola Jokic, who he's had his way with now for two straight seasons, which is impressive in its own right. But just to see him, I wouldn't say when he was playing very like super aggressive in the past couple of games or even last year that I saw a new light of confidence in him. But in that game on Saturday, he looked like a guy who truly believed, like, I'm the best player on this floor and no one can stop me. And the box score might not have reflected that. I believe he only had 17 points and 13 rebounds, and then Jokic was the guy with the 2020 game. But I thought arguably he was the best guy on the court in that game. He was outstanding defensively on Jokic. I think that he played even a level higher than he ever has defensively in that matchup. And the story of that game should have been him, because if you remember the last two possessions for Denver, Nikola Jokic had that baseline jumper that he always takes with a really high arc that always goes in. It was an air ball, and then Jamal Murray's what should have been a travel call instead of a game-tying three-point shot. That was such an incredibly difficult shot because of DeAndre Ayton's defense on him. Ayton should have been the story in that game. Unfortunately, he wasn't, just because it went to double overtime, and it was such a tough loss with a lot of shenanigans involving the referees. But, man, he's just taking it up another level right now, and I think something Dan's talked about a lot on the show in the past couple of weeks has just been how exciting that is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, I'm curious from your vantage point, what has allowed DeAndre Ayton to sustain what he's done in terms of his aggressiveness, his demeanor? Is it sort of the feedback he's getting? Is it the rise he's getting out of teammates? What do you think might be different this time around?
Well, I think it comes down to a couple of different things. I think that, first of all, I think that Chris Paul has to take some of the responsibility here in terms of claiming what has happened, because I think you look at time after time with DeAndre and running these pick and rolls with him, I think that the timing is coming down a little bit, and I think that that's helping. Just knowing that Chris Paul is going to be able to find him in his spots is going to help him. And I think that that's something that Paul and Booker have talked about, just how much they've been on him this year. And I think Paul has been the one especially to say, like, that's not an easy thing to have all these voices in your ear consistently, but he's handling it right now and handling it well. I don't really know beyond that, Dan, if I'm being honest, because if we knew the answer to that already, it would be an easier discussion to have about him. I'm really curious to just sort of see how he plays over the next 2 to 3 weeks, because I think that if they get this guy or some version of this guy that's ultra-aggressive 6 out of 8 games out of 10, when you look across the schedule as opposed to just 1 or 2 or 3, they're just a completely different team. And I think that they can really challenge any team when he's playing like this. That's really how much he matters when he's playing at that level. Like I said, I can't really remember that many games over the course of his career, really not one, where I thought that he was far and away the best player on the floor, but I thought he was on Saturday, and that's just such a huge deal, and in my opinion, really the biggest on-court development the Suns have seen in the past really year or two.
Kellen Olson from ArizonaSports.com, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. On the Chris Paul front, and yes, I think what he's done from a tutelage standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, has been very noticeable on the floor. But going back to what we saw on Friday and Saturday, the difference in Chris Paul's game first half to second half was stark both nights. I mean, 26 assists in both games in the first half and then two in the second half. Saturday especially was just a total offensive slog. What do you make of that? And then, you know, zooming out from that, Kellen, Chris Paul's basketball effect on the product so far and what you've seen in his time with the Suns.
The second half is particularly interesting, and I think I'm going to start there because the Suns are, right now, I believe they're either the slowest team in the league when it comes to pace or one of the bottom three. And that's just a byproduct of having Chris Paul as your point guard. That is going to come with time. Mm-hmm. But the Suns do not want to be playing that slow, especially in the 0.5 system. And you look at where they're struggling specifically right now. I have a piece on ArizonaSports.com kind of going through some of the concerns that fans might have right now, and it's specifically looking at someone like Chris Paul and how the struggles have gone in crunch time and how I think they're going to get better. But if you look at where the team has not been good or average, a couple of stats that stand out are points in transition, points off turnovers, and then points in the paint. Now, points in the paint is somewhere where you might not think of Chris Paul coming up right away, but he just doesn't really shoot at the rim. He barely shoots there at all, in fact. So, mm-hmm. So that's something that's going to slow down a team when you have a point guard like that who's not relentlessly attacking the basket to score, because he's not really finishing around the rim that much, and I'm not saying that's a negative about him or a negative for the team. It's just the reality of his game. So you need other guys to be attacking around the basket, more specifically DeAndre Ayton, which I think is going to help a lot. But that changes the dynamic of a team a little bit. In terms of the first half and the second half, I think that's comfort level, Vince. I don't really know where else to look at it, because it's a really bizarre trend, because you can say it's like halftime adjustments and teams like looking to kind of neutralize him a bit in those halves, but I didn't particularly see that. And I think the evidence of that the most in terms of when we've seen him get the most comfortable is that I don't really think that he's looking to score that much in his first shift out there. Mm-hmm. But whenever he's out there with the second unit and he comes back into the game for the second time, he's a completely different player and just looks to really attack off the dribble and score. And I think that's just a matter of him finding his comfort level in each phase of the game. And I think it's gone from the second quarter to now the first half. This sounds like a really grinding and slow process, but I think that's just what it's going to be with him.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, I want to hyper-focus on a couple of those elements. Number one, the clutch time performance of this basketball team, or lack thereof. What do you think the solution is for a basketball team that's got a guy like Devin Booker, proven closer in the past, and a guy like Chris Paul, who, even though his shooting percentage, and he's not one of the greatest shooters in the league, he tends to rise up to the moment. What is the solution to getting some order and some better results out of these situations?
It's time, and that's a answer I think that everyone wants to hear a quick fix, I think, but I just don't think it's going to be a quick fix. A really good stat that you can look at is last year, the Oklahoma City Thunder started the year 5-10, and a lot of their losses were by single digits in close games. 8 of those 10 losses were in games that had crunch time minutes, and if you'll remember, during the offseason, we were talking about that Chris Paul was far and away the best clutch player in the NBA. In those clutch time minutes, he was amazing and won the Oklahoma City Thunder a ton of games. It wasn't in those first 15 games. The Thunder had a plus minus of 0 in crunch time minutes during those 15 games. Mm. But for the remaining 57, when they almost won 40 of those 57 games, they were plus 103 in crunch time minutes, and then the next closest team, I believe, was the Raptors at about 57. So they almost doubled the team that came in second in terms of how dominant they were in crunch time, and that's Chris Paul. And you can see that there was a jump in his numbers after the first 15 to 20 games of the season with the Thunder. I think we're going to see that again this year. Perhaps we should have expected it a little bit more and not been as surprised that he was going to get off to a slow start, especially with the slow ramp up. But I think that the one thing that they need to figure out now, because it's not just about Chris Paul getting comfortable, it's about him and Book building chemistry and not just having a your-turn, my-turn sort of relationship in crunch time, because while they're two players who can get it done on their own right, individually it works much better when they're doing it together and when they're running sets together. And Monty kind of he had this really basic answer, but that's kind of the stage they're at right now, where in terms of what he wants to see more in crunch time when those two are out together. And he just said, well, we need to like start running plays and figuring out ways to use those two, plus DeAndre as well. Because the thing about DeAndre's recent play is, if he's playing aggressive the way he was on Friday and Saturday, I'm not usually the person that's saying he should be getting the ball in the post with 4 minutes left in a two-point game, but if he's playing the way he did in those two games, he should at least once or twice. So they need to figure out this dynamic together, and they will over time. I don't think this is just going to be a process that might take 30 games instead of 20. And I know, again, that's not really an answer people want to hear, but that's going to be the growing pains with the team. And we're seeing it across the league right now. One of the teams that's struggling in crunch time more than them is the Boston Celtics, which is not a team you think of that lacks execution with Brad Stevens and the amount of players that they've brought back. But teams are just working through some growing pains right now across the board, even when they're not really changing that much. It's just a strange dynamic that the season has presented. We've talked about on the show before the strange amount of blowouts and odd results we've seen across the league. I just think it's a strange dynamic of this season that we kind of have to get used to.
One of the cool things about Jay Crowder, came to the Suns and he was very open about why he shot so well, why he played so well, why his percentages from three-point territory were so good last year. And he basically said Eric Spoelstra and that staff empowered him, just told him, just continue shooting. It's all good. You missed. Don't worry about it. Don't look at us. You're not coming out. It's all good. There are times this year where I think the Suns believe they're a better three-point shooting team than they are. And maybe one day down the road, they will be that team. But how would you balance that? How would you balance the amount of three-point field goals taken by this team when their percentages don't warrant that kind of team-wide participation from beyond the arc?
I think it comes down to personnel, and Jay's a really interesting guy to bring up, because I think when you've got Devin Booker attacking the defense and he kicks it to the corner and Jay Crowder's wide open, I know the Crowder shooting percentages are down this year. I think they're around like 32-33% right now, and you want him more around 36-38%, especially the amount of open threes that he's taking. I think that's a shot you'll take. Now something that's interesting that comes up is that when you look at those crunch time numbers again and the differential, the Suns are only shooting 26% from three-point range right now in the fourth quarter, which is just really interesting that there's a random drop-off there, because I think that's when they're creating the most open shots. Crowder is one of those guys who's just shooting a really poor mark from there right now, and I think that's going to come over time, and I know that's been my answer for a couple of these questions, but I just truly believe that it's going to be something that gets better over the next couple of weeks. But that's sort of been a fascinating discussion around the trend the league has gone in the past 5 to 10 years, is you're taking that shot. It's been the debate with LeBron in the past 10 to 15 years. You know, when he had those crunch time possessions and we would talk about how he kicked it to Kyle Korver in the corner, and there were some people who would argue that Kyle Korver wide open in the corner should not take the game deciding shot and it should be LeBron, even if he has three guys
exactly
on him. I think that's sort of the debate there, is that do you want to trust the eighth, ninth man on the team who is out there to hit that shot, as opposed to where the focus of the defense is? I think, Dan, the interesting discussion point there is you've got Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton in those moments. You should find a way to have one of those three guys decide more often than not what happens in those moments, as opposed to guys like Cam Johnson, like Mikal Bridges, and like Jay Crowder. That's part of the balancing act, and a really good point that you bring up, too.
Kellen Olsen, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Before we let you go, and kind of on that same subject of three-point shooting, there's been some recent changes in the rotation, and Langston Galloway, who was really a spark plug off the bench, instant offense, and for the year is hitting 48% of his threes, has fallen out of the rotation. Does that make perfect sense to you when you consider the three-point struggles this team has had in recent losses, Kellen?
I think it has for the certain matchups that they've had. They're in a really tough spot right now. Obviously, Book was missing Saturday's game. Mm-hmm. Cam Johnson left Saturday's game with cramps. They were really down a couple of bodies. And Monty Williams decided to turn to Abdul Nader, who played 30 minutes. And Nader was the better matchup out there against Denver, because they play such a strong closing five that includes Michael Porter Jr., that you need as much defense out there as you can get. And that's where you look at someone like Langston Galloway and wonder if he can survive out there. Now, the obvious counter there is, well, what about Javon Carter? He plays defense. The problem with Javon is that he's just undersized. And when you play him with another point guard, he would have been out there with Chris Paul. one of those two guys now needs to guard someone who that they're not properly, they don't have the right size matchup for, and, and you're in trouble there. So I think that's a lesson that we're kind of learning with this team, is that even though they've got depth and they've got capable NBA players towards the end of the bench, something that they have not had in the past couple of years, you're still looking at guys that you do not really want to trust more than 10, more than 15 minutes. I also think, Vince, they're looking for as much athleticism on the court as they can get right now. I do believe that the change with Cam Johnson, the starting lineup, had to do with playing faster and getting them out of that bottom of the league when it comes to pace. And I think that someone like Nader playing as well helps them with that. He's a great athlete and someone who I think is only going to get more comfortable with time and not a bad shooter in his own right. Yeah. I think someone who Suns fans are going to come around on. I don't think he got a fair end of the stick in terms of making a good first impression on Saturday.
Yeah, and I didn't mind what I saw, but I mean, Galloway came in so many different times, but your explanation makes perfect sense from the defensive side of the ball. So, Kellen, thanks for the time. As always, we appreciate it. And yes, you can check out Kellen's piece. It's featured on ArizonaSports.com right now. Why the Suns' recent losing skid shouldn't set off alarms. KO, great stuff, man.